Hi, welcome to the Macro Show. We talk macro, and you wonder, is Fed Chair Powell wrong? I mean, you really probably don't actually wonder that because you already know the truth. We're going to take a look at his 60 Minutes interview tonight. We're also going to look at a Facebook small and mid-sized business survey. Some very interesting things in there that probably shed some light on why we're seeing these 700,000 weekly unemployment claims and why we're probably going to continue to see elevated numbers. We've got treasury auctions today. I know it's an odd day. We had two of them today. Commitment of traders reports on how hedge funds managers are positioned, and a CPI preview, which is coming tomorrow. Usually it's on Wednesdays, but we got that. Let's get right into our headline story of is Fed Chair Powell wrong? And you have to go to the 60 Minutes interview. Now, luckily you can watch the whole thing and you can read the whole transcript if you'd prefer. But let's go down here to some of the questions that were asked by Scott Pelley. What are your projections? He says, what are your projections for growth and unemployment? And I love it, as a politician, which Jay Powell is not, he answers it like one. If you look at what private sector forecasters are saying, right? Not what he's saying, what private forecasters are saying, that and our members of the FOMC board, we're looking at a growth this year in range of 6 to 7%. I don't think that it might happen, maybe for a quarter, but for the year, which would be the highest level in, you know, 30 years, maybe even a bit higher. We're forecasting unemployment down from 6% to maybe between 4 and 5. Wow, that'd be really impressive. And he said, Scott says, it seems like you're not expecting a recovery, you're expecting a boom. And Jay says, yes, I would say the growth we're expecting in the second half of this year is going to be very strong. I'm not sure I agree with this. Now, they does ask him about the health of the banks. And let's see if we, here it is. So Scott asks, what chances of a systemic breakdown like 2008 are what today? So Jay says the chances that we would have a breakdown that looked anything like where you had banks making terrible loans, right? An investment decision, yeah, because they really didn't want this SLR exemption to come back, and needing and having low levels of liquidity and weak capital position, thus needing a government bailout, the chances of that are very low because we stuffed them full of bank reserves and we've convinced everyone that bank reserves are actually good. And he says very low, but the world changes. The world evolves and risk changes. Well, I'd say the risk that we keep our eyes on the most now is cyber risk. So pretty much no problems with the banks, according to Jay Powell. And why did this interview happen in the first place? It's because of tomorrow's CPI print. Now, I know the interview was centered around kind of a 12-month follow-up from the pandemic. But let's face it, it was wrapped around tomorrow's CPI print because this is toward the end of the interview. And he says, Scott says, and when it hits 2%, how patient are you going to be? Because before that, Jay says, we want inflation to go up materially above 2%, you know, not back to the days of old. And then Jay goes on to say, well, what we said was we want to see inflation move up to 2%. And we mean that on a sustainable basis. We don't mean just tap the base once. So in translation, look, if this thing prints 2% next month, or even the month after, or the month after that, which is likely in one of the next 3 months, we're going to see a 2% print on the CPI on a year-over-year basis. He says, that's not enough. We'd also like to see a track and move modestly above 2% for some time. In order to get an average, most of you know, you have to go over your target. And the reason for that is we want inflation to average 2% over time. To get that, that's when we'll raise interest rates, which he later on in here says, we're not going to raise it this year. Oh, here, Scott. So all the way through the end of the year, you wouldn't see rates increasing. He says, I think it's highly unlikely we would raise rates this year. Raise rates anything like this year? No, probably not even next year or the year after that. Now, this is an interesting survey from Facebook titled The Global State of Small Businesses, and they started doing this last year, and I just caught on to this. But let's look at the executive summary because, I think there's some interesting things here that kind of suggest why we're seeing this problem with high unemployment claims when we all agree they should be falling. So Facebook surveyed 35,000 small business leaders across 27 countries and territories. Now, in February 2021, I understand this isn't just the US only, but things around the world are going to come back to here because small business owners, you know, if you have been or are a small business owner, the reality is the problems you face, whether you're in one part of the world or another, they're very similar. Just the inherent issues of being a small business owner are the same. Sure, you're going to have different political issues, different tax issues in different parts of the world, but just the struggles of running a small business are the same. So let's take a look at some of the highlights here. And it says with almost one quarter, or the study finds that small businesses worldwide continue to struggle with maintaining operations, with almost one quarter, 24% of small business surveys reporting they were closed in February 2021. And that is impressive. Closures also rose in the U.S. from 14% in October to 22% in February. So keep this in mind, despite, government handouts, small business owners actually did worse from the end of fourth quarter of last year going into the first quarter of this year. More of them have closed, and that is not a good sign. It goes on to say only 54% of small business owners were confident their ability to continue operating for at least 6 months if the current circumstances persist, with a higher percentage, 68%, among those in the U.S. So U.S. small businesses were a little more optimistic, but worldwide, I mean, that's terrible. If quarter of them completely failed, that's terrible. And over half of still operating small businesses, 55%, and then the U.S. 51%, reported a decline in sales in January 2021 compared to the previous year. So think about this from hiring needs and demand. So they're saying, look, we saw less demand. And 30% of operating SMBs and 27% of U.S. SMBs have reduced their workforces. So probably some of them have brought employees back and are realizing, well, maybe we don't need them after all. And just over half of small businesses overall and within the U.S. 51% indicated they did not plan to rehire, laid off, or furloughed employees in the next 6 months. So look, you think about Jay Powell's comment is we're going to have a booming second half. And here you're seeing small businesses saying, look, half of us, we might not make it. And so we're not going to add on people. We're not going to bring back people. And maybe we're even, it's not saying this in the report, but they may actually end up cutting people if demand doesn't come back to small businesses. So we know that, hotels, cafes, and restaurants were heavily hit. We know women-led SMBs were heavily hit. We don't need numbers. We already know these things just from what's going on in the economy. And let's see, minority-owned, black-led SMBs were also more likely to report being closed. So what you're seeing is just difficulty out there. Here you go. So you have minorities down here struggling as well. So just small businesses overall are just in dire shape. And over 60% of global and U.S. SMBs have made at least one change the way they do business. If you want to stay in business, you're going to be making a lot of changes. And in that area, it's going to be digital tools. And over half of SMBs and 60% of the U.S. reported using digital tools to communicate with customers. So something they didn't really know how to do or want to do, they're starting to do because they're also reporting higher share of digital sales, also more likely have reported more robust sales. So what they're saying is, we've seen this shift in how business is being done, and small businesses often lag that. Again, if you've owned a small business or you own it, there is a cost to do things. And if you don't have to go digital and put a website with a order processing or an app or all those things, or maybe you just don't know how to do it, you don't do it. But now the world's changed, you're being forced into it. One of the challenges that I see just being inside the financial services industry, when I've talked to small business owners, is a lot of them just don't have much money to weather a storm. They can get through a short storm, but the longer the storm, they just don't have the cash flow. They just don't have the assets. They don't have the money to get through it. And that's what we're seeing in this report, is people are struggling, and all of this money being pushed out into the economy is not going to small businesses because people aren't feeling comfortable with them. Going to big businesses. All right, let's talk about today's auctions. Is a bit unusual. Usually we see the 3 year on one day, a 10 year, and the 30 year on Thursday. So we see Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday. Today we're getting the 3 and the 10 year, tomorrow the 30 year. And we didn't have this run in to the auction of, oh my God, it's going to be horrible, like we've had in the past. But how would you know that? If you wanted to know, how would you know? Well, you would simply go to the primary dealer statistics, because this is the inventory, right? I mean, these are the people that are selling securities, treasury securities. So what's their inventory level like? Well, if you look at the 3-year, they were short. They were negative 3.7 billion. So you knew there was a demand for 3-year notes. So that auction was going to be fine. And we'll look at it. And how about the 10-year? Well, there was a shortage of 300 million. Now there's a surplus of 1.9 billion. That number is, while recently high, overall, it is a very low number. So you knew the odds are pretty favorable that demand should be at least okay for the 10-year. And how about for tomorrow's 30-year? Well, what do we see here? That 20 and 30-year maturity have gone from 52.5 billion on dealer inventories down to 37.5 roughly. So you think about, is there going to be decent demand for the 30-year? There should. I'll keep in mind that the Fed is buying 10.5 billion of these things a month. I thought this number would go down faster, and it just could be because so many people have been selling, dealers have been just forced to take on the inventory, and now that we're finally seeing it go down. So if there's any fears of tomorrow's auction being bad, it's pretty unlikely. Let's take a look at the 3-year note. Notably, the low yield was at 0.08. So there were bidders at zero, and you kind of wonder why. Well, there's no wonder why. The dealers need inventory. There's a demand for 3-year notes, so they're going to try to get some. Overall, this was a pretty good auction. Indirect bidders took a bit higher percentage. That's really the focus of the market. Other than the bid to cover was slightly below its 6-month average, but due to the increase from indirect bidders or foreign bidders, the market seemed to like that. How about the 10-year? Not quite as good, just kind of average auction. The low yield here, also at zero. Why? We know dealers need these. The indirect bidders just wasn't quite as strong, and the bid to cover was just very slightly below a 6-month average. Overall, no hiccups in the auction, and everything went through smoothly. Yields were flat on the day. All right, let's take a look at the positioning of hedge fund managers in the futures market. And so we've got from Hedgeopia, the hedge fund managers went long as of Tuesday last week. Be interesting to see if they've changed that opinion, because tomorrow CPI has got a lot of people nervous. How about on the long bond? Just a slight increase on the 30-year short position. Let's go to our friend Stefan from Skyway Asset Management. And he's given us the complete breakdown here. And he says, look, non-commercials, short positions, down slightly, commercial short positions up slightly, and non-reportable down slightly. So overall net down slightly. And when he gives us this nice breakdown saying, look, overall, if you factor all positions, what do you see? There is a slight increase in the net longs. He, according to his research, says, look, that's bullish. Of course, being the bond king, we'll take any data that supports higher bond prices and lower treasury yields. So we'll hope that he is right about that, and we'll be excited to see how that plays out. Looking at West Texas Intermediate, we see virtually no real change in speculative positioning there. How about the S&P 500? Market remains net short, but not by much. How about the euro? Now, this is, again, euro goes down. This is bullish for the dollar. I know a lot of people say the dollar isn't going up, but look, speculative positioning on the euro is slowly ticking down. Would suggest that the euro is headed lower, and that should push the dollar higher. How about gold? A little push back there up in gold futures as what looks like a very clear topping pattern, as we're in a major neckline, break 1687, and there's your floor out of that. Keep an eye on gold. How about the NASDAQ? Still net short, but slightly less. The Russell 2000 increased their net short on the small cap index as it appears to be rolling over and potentially topping. We talked about that on the Sunday night chart show. And let's take a look at the dollar. Dollar longs backed off a little bit. And we also talked about this on the Sunday night chart show, how the dollar is forming a bullish signal. And I should have another report out hopefully this week for you on from Momentum Timer Pro, and looking kind of the historicals of how momentum does signal major bottoms. And I think you'll find that report interesting. Okay, on to the consumer price index, because this is being billed as the big deal, right? we have the headline CPI projected at 2.5% year over year. So I think it's at 1.7. And then you have the core CPI, which is excluding food and energy, because food and energy are more volatile, is being projected at 1.5. And I want to say it's at 1.4. Let's take a look and see how likely we're going to get to those big numbers. So to do that, we're first going to take a look at the consumer price index on a year-over-year rate with crude oil. Now, you have to remember, the CPI is a lagging index. It is not a leading index. It lags. Now, if you're uncertain about that, let's lay this out. Crude oil prices go up. How long does that take to pass through the supply chain? It's not instantaneous. It takes months. So that's how you know the CPI is a lagging index. So if we just looked at crude oil and we look at the recent very tight relationship to the CPI, what does that tell us? Well, 2% is this light line here. Should have turned tooltips off, but there it is. Suggesting that the 2.5% print would put it way up here. So it seems like somewhere around 2% is a more likely number. Can it overshoot? Sure. But it seems like 2% is pretty reasonable target for where we should see the headline CPI tomorrow. Now, let's take a look at it compared to the dollar. So I've got the trade-weighted dollar. You see a minus sign in front of it. It's inverted. And the dollar and CPI have an inverse relationship. It's not tight. It's not perfect, but it's very close. And so what you see here is the dollar's been rising, shown falling, and that should put some downward pressure on the CPI. So on one hand, you've got crude oil saying higher, you've got the dollar saying a little bit lower. That's why I'm not convinced we see that 2.5% number. We might. Now let's take a look at core, against excluding food and energy. And core is more important because this is where you're going to find treasury yields are more interested in core CPI. And we know that's rolled over and headed lower. And with core, what we're looking for here is they're looking for a higher number on this as well. And what you see from the monetary base, this is that dollar prison that we talked about in the Macro Voices interview, is suggesting that due to liquidity trap, that if you have higher prices in one part of the economy, it has to be offset by lower prices in the other. Now, we do know, due to the stimulus, it's possible that the money supply got a little bit of a bump above the monetary base in the money multiplier calculation, which means it doesn't mean it completely reversed directions massively. It just could mean there's a bump there. So could we see a little bit of an increase in the core CPI? Sure. Are we going to see a substantial one? Not likely. And even if it is at 1.5%, it really doesn't change the picture much at all. All right. So let's see. With that, we've got the consumer price index and the in blue, and we got the core in red. Keep in mind that even though the blue, because it has food and energy, is very volatile, it tends to follow the core CPI. And let's zoom in here to the 5-year, and you can see that, let's see, excluding food and energy, the core is at 1.3 and the headline is at 1.7. So even if the core goes back to 1.5, it's still well under the pandemic, post-pandemic peak here of where the core has been. So it's not really a big deal if we see a slight increase in the core CPI, but it will be really interesting to see, what effects that crude oil and the dollar and the monetary base are having on these, because again, everyone's projecting massively higher inflation. And even though due to base effects from this time last year, we should see a little bit higher bumps, the month over month numbers will be really critical here in determining what's going on. And before we wrap up, the last bit of note is price to earnings ratio as we go into first quarter earnings season are only 25% higher than normal. Anyways, thanks for watching. Thanks for being fans. Thanks for supporting the show. Hopefully I'll have an update on a show on Dr. Lacey Hunt's recent piece and another report on Momentum Timer Pro, focus on the dollar and maybe some other things for later this week. I'm your host, Steve Van Meter. Thanks for watching. Again, thanks for being fans. And I will see you on Wednesday for the macro show. So be sure to keep an eye on the CPI tomorrow and see just how close we got. The content of this video is provides educational information only, is not intended to provide investment or other advice. Deals not to be construed as recommendation or solicitation to buy or sell any security, financial instrument, or to participate in any particular trading strategies. Here was paired by Steve Van Meter. Personal capacity, opinions expressed as feel and own do not reflect the view of Atlas Financial Advisors Inc. or Steve Van Meter Financial.